The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, the 31st of March, 2006, and this is show number 50, if you can believe it. The big 5-0, the golden anniversary. It's a little bit hard to believe, actually, that I've been doing this show now for 50 episodes, but it has been fun. It's given me a chance to really follow the sport that I enjoy to watch so much is MotoGP and all motorcycle road racing in general. It's a sort of forced me to pay more attention and follow the sport a little more closely. So I appreciate that. And I also do enjoy the chances that I've had to exchange email with all the listeners and stuff like that. I get a lot of email every week, and it's kind of cool. And then participating in forums, all that sort of stuff. In any event, enough sappy stuff. On to today's topics. We have some reader email. I have Randy Norian is a purchase a 250cc racer, and I've got a little story about that. Basically, it was an email from Randy, so it's a story that Randy wrote about it. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Rossi's crash at Jerez. We're going to kind of analyze it somewhat, not quite as sort of analytically frame by frame going in TV, but I found some pictures on Superbike Planet that were really good. Actually, I was shown a link of them. And looking at those, you see some stuff about that crash that you wouldn't have realized, and then I'll talk a little bit more about that. Then we have an interview with Sharon Foxworthy from racingtosavelives.org, which is a 501(c) charitable organization, and basically a charity to help kids. They take charitable contributions, and then they parcel out this money to things like the Make-A-Wish Foundation and several other charities that are focused on children. And they're doing a really cool event here on April 13th. So it's coming up quite soon. It's only about 2 weeks away from now as we're recording the show right now. But it's a very, very cool event at the brand new Miller Motorsports Park. And Sharon's going to tell us all about that. It's actually really super interesting. And I think you'll enjoy that. And then, of course, we're also going to be announcing the winner of our Komodo Leathers contest that we had. I got a lot of entries on that, a ton. And like I said before, I simply did not have time to personally answer each and every one of those entry emails. I did read them all, of course, because I had to check if the answers were right, which thankfully everybody got the answers right. I didn't want to have like, oh boy, you know, got the answers wrong, throw his entry away or anything like that. So, you know, I mean, they were fairly easy questions, but you did have to, you know, listen to the thing and get the right answers. And I could tell that people had listened to the interview. A lot of people, probably at least half of the entries had, you know, comments and things like that. And a lot of, I don't want to say sympathy, but, you know, expressions of something or other about my deployment coming up and, you know, that sort of thing. And sucks that you're going to mix the GP, that kind of stuff. And so I appreciate that a lot. Thank you very much, all you guys out there and girls. And thank you very much for entering. I think Wayne enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. We got a lot of action, and I hope that you all enjoyed it out of there. And the only unfortunate thing out of it is that there can only be one winner for that free set of leathers. But we will announce that a little bit later in the show, and I'll keep you kind of dangling there for the next few minutes about it may have been you that won the free set of leathers from Komodo. Alrighty, I wanted to read another reader email before we get into the rest of the stories here today. And actually, I got several of them. And let's see, we're going to take a look. The first one here is from Eric Angel. Actually, before we read Eric's email, let me explain something. Typically this show, in case you didn't know, I write it out completely and it's all scripted and I'm reading from a script. I'm doing something a little bit different this time for several reasons, and I'm ad-libbing it. I've got some notes, I've got some, you know, little talking points here, and I'm just going to kind of ramble. So, one, I might say and ah and quite a bit more, and two, which I'll edit some of those out where they're really bad, and two, you may notice there's a little bit more rambling. So let me know in an email if what you think. You know, go back to the old way, writing everything out, Bob, scripting, or stick with a new way of rambling, or a mix of the two, which it'll probably be a mix of the two always, because there's some stuff that I simply, you know, I'm not going to be able to just go off the top of my head. So in any event, little experiment, we'll kind of let it we'll kind of ride it out, see how it works. It's, like I said, it's for a few different reasons. One, that's one common complaint that I see about the show is that it's, pop dance to me, it's all boring. Well, when you're just reading something, you try to inject some feeling into it and everything, but it's a little difficult. When you're just talking along, it's somewhat different, which I don't hear that a lot, by the way. See, here's the rambling. But I do read it now and then. And two, though, it's simply a matter of time. I've just, this has been an extraordinarily busy month for me on a personal level, the Navy, and of course also at work. So I'm putting in more hours at work, and then the hours that I do have at home, I've got more demands on my time, and I just have not had the time to put into the podcast. And I regret that, and this show may very well show that, this episode of the show, and I apologize for that in advance. But it takes a lot of time to write these things up and to do a lot of the research and everything. This past week, there wasn't really a whole lot of MotoGP news. Considering we just had the season opener, you'd think that there'd be tons of stuff coming out, but there really wasn't. So I talk about some of the stuff that's there and whatever. Let's get on with these emails before I drive myself crazy with my rambling. First one from Eric Angel. He says, "Hey Bob, I don't think I've heard this mentioned on your show or not. I apologize if you've covered it. Anyway, have you noticed that the factory Ducatis are not running the Marlboro livery? Camel and Fortuna were on the bike, so obviously Spain is not one of the countries where there is a ban on tobacco advertising. Do you know what's up with that?" And, all right, Eric, I replied to you, but since then I did a little time more research into that, and I found even a better answer. And what I said to Eric is that Spain is in kind of a gray area as far as the whole EU's ban on tobacco advertising. Basically, Spain knows that motorsport in general, Formula One, and they're very fanatic about motorcycle racing, is like their number two sport, very, very, just barely behind soccer. They're insane about it, and they make a lot of money off of it. And they've sort of decided that the whole EU ban on tobacco advertising really kind of doesn't fit the Spanish outlook. So they're semi-ignoring it. And I had thought, my theory was that perhaps Philip Morris was not quite so comfortable with flaunting the EU laws, and that JTI, the owners of Camel, and Altadis, the owners of the Fortuna brand, were, who cares, right? Actually, I think the thing is that Spain has a regulation, despite the fact that this is different from the official EU regulations, Spain has a regulation similar to the US where each tobacco company can sponsor one type of event. And Marlboro is putting their money into Formula One, so they had to run blank motorcycles at the Jerez race in MotoGP, whereas Camel and Fortuna were, running their liveries. Just like we saw here in the Grand Prix, you'll see, actually, they didn't run Galois on the Camel bikes, but some of the bikes had cigarette brands. It depends. You're not going to see Marlboro on a U.S. MotoGP race because I think they run it in, some probably NASCAR type thing. Whatever. There's a race that has Marlboros. Okay, so moving on. Next email. Let's cover another one. Some of these were pretty cool. Okay, here's one from the Nawaz, and he says, "I predict one thing, Bob. Take my word. I think Vale will be plagued with inconsistency this year. Why? Because he believes in luck, and he crashed out first race. I think this is all because he took the Doctor logo off of his backside, of his leathers. It now says Rossi in a regular font. And he also took it off of the motorcycle where it was on several places. We've noticed that it doesn't say the Doctor in the funky multicolored lettings. He's just got Rossi in this, 1960s looking Helvetica straight, very, very boring letters. I think he's matching the number plate of the boring looking Camel livery. And the Nawaz continues, "I think that was his mojo. I know it's silly, but let's see." And he's right that Rossi does believe in luck. And this has been actually going around a little bit on the internet forums that chances are we're going to be seeing the Doctor written again on Rossi's leathers and bike at Qatar, because if he does believe in luck, he certainly didn't have a whole lot of Jerez. Colin Edwards was quoted as saying something along the lines, "I can't wait to get out of here." They had a miserable weekend. The whole time just sucked. They never could get the times down. Obviously the bikes just were not working. They could not eliminate that chatter. And then the whole first corner thing is just, it was a nightmare. So they're moving on to Qatar, and hopefully they'll do better, and we'll just have to wait and see whether or not the funky-looking multicolored Doctor does show back up on Rossi's leathers or not, because I think he's going to be needing a new set. So, and then another email that we have, one last one, let's talk about it here. Brian Henson says, Watch for Tony Elias to be on the podium soon. After the incident with Rossi, he fought his way through the pack to challenge Hayden for third. Quite a strong performance, I would say. Rossi continues to show that he's a class act by being gracious in his acceptance of Elias' apology and maintaining a positive outlook on the weekend, not to mention finishing the race on a broken bike. Compare that to Aaron Yates and the infamous dropkick incident. And what Brian's talking about there, for maybe international listeners that hadn't seen it, was 2 years ago. It was 2004, the Daytona 200 Superbike race. At the time, it was Superbikes. And Aaron Yates, if I recall correctly, and if I'm wrong on this, I think people correct me, but I think it was that Aaron Yates ran into the backmarker. But basically, he came up on a backmarker, and one way or another, that caused both Anthony Fania and Aaron Yates to crash. And I can't remember if it was Aaron Yates that crashed into Fania or Fania crashed into Yates. I think it was that Yates crashed into Fania. Whatever, they both crash. And while they're getting up, Yates starts jumping up and down and yelling. I mean, you could see he was pissed. And he ended up, you know, shoving Fania, shoving the other rider, and then doing this just ridiculous-looking World Wrestling Federation-type flying drop-kicky thing that barely even touched Fania and just looked ridiculous and was pretty much an embarrassment to AMA and the Daytona 200 there for a while. However, I will say this, that after seeing Fania's incident in this year's Daytona 200, where his crash, which was, you know, it's just a single rider crash. Well, actually, no, he said that he was taken out by another rider. But in any case, he crashed. And that caused the pace car to be brought out. While they were loading Fania up and driving him away in the ambulance or whatever, and he was okay and everything, he turns around and he's sort of going around in a big 360, flipping off what looked like, it looked like he was flipping off the crowd. You know, two big spread eagles, you know, flipping the bird. And it was a little odd. He said later that he was directing that to the other rider in the incident. And for the life of me, I can't remember who it was. I have to say I didn't follow too much of the Daytona 200. In fact, I think by that point of the race, I was sort of semi-dozing off. But I do remember seeing that. And it was maybe that leads you to believe that there might be a little bit more to that whole Yates-Fania incident of a couple of years ago. Because, you know, I don't know. Apparently, both of them are somewhat hot-headed. In any case, we got totally distracted there from that email where we're talking really about Rossi continuing showing he's a class act and all of that, which is true. But I think Elias was the more class act of that whole incident by the levels that he went to apologize. You know, some people have said that Elias would have been better served by not apologizing at all or barely acknowledging the fact to sort of try to play mind games and psych Rossi out and this and that and the other. And one, you're not going to win any mind games with Rossi, that kind of trickery. You know, you're better off doing the apologizing thing and trying to basically suck up a little bit. And I don't think Elias was sucking up. I think he's genuinely a nice guy, and he genuinely felt bad, and he genuinely wanted to apologize to Rossi. So he was, you know, you could see that he was very effusive with his apologies while they were still on the track doing the cool down lap, you know, all wearing helmets and leathers and so forth. Then after they came off and bikes are in park for me and all that, apparently Elias, you know, ducked under the mostly closed Yamaha garage door to go in there and apologize again and apologize to all of the mechanics and all of that. I mean, I think the guy genuinely felt bad, and, you know, that's understandable. And it's cool that he was so outgoing in those apologies. And it was, you know, it was good of Rossi to accept it. And he even did with a bit of humor. Like I said last week, he said, you know, he said that in his quote, who knows, he actually said it to Elias or just used it as a quote later on or whatever. But he said, you know, next time, you know, make sure you break. And if you're going to run into somebody, don't run into me. So, you know, it's kind of funny, and you sort of make fun of the situation and you move on. And that's what they're doing. So here's some reader email for the day. Why don't we get on to another story? I exchanged some emails with the listener, Randy Norian. And after I mentioned that I'm planning to do my first track day coming up here soon and all that, we kind of got to talking about dedicated track day bikes and racing motorcycles rather than, you know, taking your street bike to the track. Randy sent me a great email where he's talking about his Honda RS250 two-stroke, and he sent it along with a link to a whole bunch of photos and stuff. And I kind of figured I'd pass it on because it was kind of a cool story. And I know that many of you out there that are listening are already big track day junkies and racing types. So this, you know, may not be anything all that excitingly interesting to you, and apologies in advance that it's not your motorcycle that I'm talking about. But go ahead, send me pictures of your stuff, and I'll post those also on the MotoGPOD.com website. But I thought that this was, like I said, a good email. It was interesting, and Randy's pictures are great, and it's always fun to see other people's cool toys. So let's take a look at Randy's email. He said, I found this 1997 RS250 on a Weira bulletin board for $4,500 with an astonishing amount of spares. It was, however, hideous. I spruced it up after I brought it home. When raced, they eat a lot of parts, but I'm taking it easier on the motor. Why do 13,000 RPM on a track day? So I'm doubling the piston ring life, if not more. My cost to operate the RS is about the same as for my TL1000S, which eats tires at an amazing rate. On the other hand, at first, I did a lot of service on the RS until I figured out what was wearing and how quickly it was wearing. As far as having a dedicated track bike, well, it's nice to just roll it out of the garage and into the van for a track day. No ritual prepping of the street bike. Besides, it's different, and it can do things my 1000 simply cannot. You just have to ride it to believe it. It's 220 pounds lighter than my 1000 and has as much rubber. They're just amazing bikes. 235 pounds altogether. Leader bikes are fun on the tracks. 600 are fun. The 250 is a different kind of fun. I've never ridden anything like it, and so I'm struggling to bring my corner entry speeds up to what the bike is capable of. Problem is, I have 15 years of habits developed riding bigger, heavier street bikes turned race bikes, and so my personal panic limits are pretty low. The 250 is fast, no mistake. It's as quick as a lot of the 600s, but it can turn in and corner like nothing else. So you really have to use that ability if you want to go faster than bikes with more motor. High entry speed makes me very panicky, and this is where this bike excels. So now I find myself making up ground entering corners for a change. Anyhow, it's all good fun. I was ready for something new, and the 250 sure filled the bill. Before this, I had ridden an RGV 250 on the track, that's an Aprilia RGV 250, not bad, but sort of a pile, and an older TZ 250, a Yamaha TZ 250, which I thought would be faster. I bought the RS just to do track days, but here I am racing it. It's awesome. Besides, these things are going the way of the dodo. I want my own little GP bike to go look at in my garage. As a GP fanatic, you owe it to yourself to try out a 250 GP bike once you get used to the track thing, so which would be very cool. So like I said, Randy included a link to a webpage full of photos showing his kind of step-by-step process of sprucing the bike up from hideous to actually spectacular. That was one of the things when I saw the pictures, like, ooh, that's in nice shape. And then you see it when Randy bought it and what he did to fix it up. That's what makes this this email and these pictures kind of cool. It's really, really great. Did a whole lot of work on it. And the link is a little long, so rather than try and read it out, I guess I'll always say this. I'm just going to put the show link in the show notes on MotoGPOD.com. Go ahead and take a look. It's a Mac.com website that he's got a photo album up down there. Now, Randy also sent some cool pics of a get-together of two-stroke types that they had last summer at Autobahn for the 20th anniversary of the Suzuki RG500. Now, Sportrider came out and covered that event. In fact, the write-up in Sportrider is in the April 2006 issue, which should be available right now, Sportrider magazine. And same story, I'll put that link on the MotoGPOD.com website as well to those photos. It's cool stuff. There's a lot of great pictures of Kent Kunitsugu riding a wide variety of cool motorcycles that belong to other people around a track. And kind of neat stuff that makes you really jealous when you're not a journalist. So, who knows, maybe if MotoGPOD continues to grow, I'll be able to be that guy that gets invited out there to test ride a whole bunch of other people's stuff. Alrighty, we're going to take a look at the pictures on superbikeplanet.com of Rossi's crash. There's quite a few of them up there. They're about the best higher resolution photos that I've found so far that give you a few different angles on the crash. I know that you can kind of, well, riders crash on the first lap all the time, and why should we care so much? This is no big deal. But Valentino Rossi does not crash on the first lap, the first corner of the first lap all the time. That's an extremely unusual happening. So it's definitely news. It's worth talking about, and it's kind of interesting to see the step-by-step progression of what happened. Because what you see on the television feed, the main thing that most of us have seen and that may have been the only things that we've seen, is a little bit different than what actually happened. Until I saw these pictures, I didn't quite understand some of the effects that Rossi was undergoing. So basically, we've got this sequence of pictures here on Superbike Planet. I will put the link up on the website. It's a fairly long URL. I guess if you're listening right now and you want to follow along, it's superbikeplanet.com/image/2006/MGP/Jerez/3. And go ahead and load that page and pause the podcast for a second, or just click the link from MotoGPOD.com. So we've got these nine images in a row, and they've got some fun, some funny captions and all that. Rossi's Bad Day, Jerez MotoGP 2006. Images by, you know, the guy who's always carrying a camera. And we see the sequence of what's going on with the crash, where initially he's taken out right there by Tony Elias, you know, basically just kind of tapping his rear wheel. He didn't really give him, you know, a hugely solid hit, but it was enough that it knocked him down. So Rossi loses the bike. He starts going down, and it is, one of the captions says, it's amazing that this didn't turn into a major incident. And it is, because you see the crowd. And I mean, Rossi was up, and he would have been in fourth place going into that turn. And he's just in front of a whole bunch of other people right in the middle of stuff. It's amazing that he, not only that it did not turn into a major incident, but it's also amazing that Rossi didn't get run over by several riders. You know, Hopkins barely avoided him. Edwards barely avoided him. Elias barely avoided him. Now, when I say Edwards barely avoided him, this is because that's what it looks like on television. You see Rossi crouching on the ground in a, you know, a tuck position sort of thing, where he's like, you know, a turtle, basically motionless there on the track on his knees and his elbows, crouched down, and Elias just barely goes by him, and it was so close. I mean, you know, he may have, parts of the bike or parts of Elias may have actually hit Rossi, but whatever, he's laying there on the ground. And then on television, you think after that, he gets up and he kind of does his, you know, handshaking, you know, thing, sort of small temper tantrum-y thing that he did. And then he starts walking over towards the bike. When you see these still pictures, you see that there's some myth, something missing there. He was up and then knocked down again by Colin Edwards. They show him where, you know, he's obviously gotten up off the ground from his crouching position. And then in the next photo, he's literally in the middle of falling down. So, I mean, his feet are off the ground. He's about to land on his tailbone on the track right after having been knocked over by Edwards. So, I mean, he took kind of a beating on that, which may excuse why he sort of had this temper tantrum issue going on, and why he sort of took a little while to kind of collect himself compared to what we have seen, you know, with rat crashes by Rossi and by other writers, where it's like, it's just amazing how fast these guys get up. You know, they're on the ground, and before they've even stopped sliding, they're, you know, working at getting up to go run over there and get the motorcycle. Witness Duhamel's crash at the Daytona 200 with the motorcycle. You know, he goes over the bars and everything else, big crash, blah, blah, blah. And he's just wham, back on that motorcycle as fast as you can imagine. So Rossi did lose a few seconds doing all that, but he got back out on the track and he was riding along. And you need to see these pictures. It was kind of interesting, and it showed some stuff. One thing it doesn't show is the damage to the motorcycle. Now, the commentators in the race said, oh, he's lost a foot peg. It looked like he lost a foot peg. That's, in fact, what I said in my race report last week, that he lost his foot peg. However, on the Eurosport feed, towards the end, actually after the race, the end of the race, in to park before the podium when they're all going to park for May and all that, Mamola is down there, and he sees Rossi's bike. He says, I'm looking at Rossi's bike right now. There's a hole in the fairing. But that the foot peg was still there. He said that the brake pedal, though, was bent out of the way, and that this would affect Rossi's braking, and that might very well explain why Rossi's lap times never, you know, among other things, but that why Rossi's lap times were not really all that great through the race. He was typically in like the 142s, the high 142s, and even into the 143s, whereas Caparossi was in the 141s. So Rossi was going faster than the back end of the field, but he didn't have a race pace to keep up with the leaders all through the race. And I mean, I'm not knocking it. It's a miracle, you know, the guy managed to go out there, finish the race. He must have been just sore and brutally tired from the way he was having to ride in order to accommodate for that bent brake pedal and possibly broken foot peg. I'm not 100% sure. We haven't got yet a full confirmation one way or the other of how much of that foot peg was left. I do have a high resolution image that I got that shows the right side of Rossi's bike as he's racing along. And you see that it looks like his boot is almost wedged in by the rear set. that might have been because he was trying to reach this bent brake pedal, or it might have been because there wasn't enough foot peg, or what. But whatever it was, he didn't have the correct position on the motorcycle with his foot, you know, on a foot peg, which is so critical for lap times and everything, where you're doing peg weighting and shifting from side to side and all of this. You don't want to be having to fight the motorcycle and try to untangle your foot from your rear set or whatever it is that's going on with trying to keep it down there. So it just points out all that much more how much of a motorcycle racing god Rossi really is. I mean, he really is. He knows how to ride that motorcycle, and he does very well. He's been plagued with some problems with the new 2006 model with vibration, not chatter, vibration. But, you know, he's doing his best to sort all that out. We're going to see what happens at Qatar next week. Probably not exactly what you'd call Rossi's favorite circuit with his history there from Qatar. But I think he'll do okay. We'll just have to see exactly how he bounces back from all of this. There wasn't a lot of news this past week in general about this incident. We had a flurry of news, you know, on the weekend, and then things have been fairly quiet. There's been some, you know, chatter on the internet boards and all that kind of thing, but no actual real news that's been coming up. So in any event, take a look at these pictures. Like I said, there's a link on MotoGPOD.com. I think you'll enjoy it. I thought it was kind of cool. And maybe email me in if you have a better image of the right side of Rossi's bike than the one I have, because I'll put that up there too on there as well. It'll be on the MotoGPOD.com site. And take a look at that. See if you can see. It's very dark down by where his foot is. It's really kind of tough to see what his foot is on. But take a look at the image. See if you're seeing what I think I'm seeing. If you disagree, or if you have better images, or if you have links to other high-resolution images, you know, let me know. Send me an email. We'll link to it on the website. I'll mention to it on the maybe next show. You know, I don't want to drag the Rossi crash thing out for the entire season, but it's certainly worth mentioning in more show than just one. All right, I have Sharon Foxworthy on the phone from RacingToSaveLives.org. RacingToSaveLives.org is an organization that Sharon and her husband Stan have set up to help benefit children's charities through various motorcycle-related events, and they have a big 4-day weekend coming up here on April 13th through the 16th at the brand new Miller Motorsports Park in Utah. Isn't that right, Sharon?
That is correct.
All right. First of all, can you tell us a little bit about RacingToSaveLives.org?
Well, I'd be happy to. First of all, this is our third year. Our first year, there was just a small genesis of us wanting to do something good for our community, and we decided to host basically a walk-a-thon on wheels, so to speak. We did it at a local track here in Denver. It rained the entire week, but we had enough riders come out and participate with us that we managed to raise about $70,000 in donations. We were blown away. We thought, my goodness, if we can do this with rain, what can we do next year? So for 2005, we decided to try for a bigger venue, and we talked with Pikes Peak International Raceway. We asked them if they would be willing to host our event, and to our great surprise, they said yes. And so last May, we managed to hold another event. That year, we raised about $130,000 in total donations. So as you can see, our growth has been just phenomenal. Well, as many of you know, in October of last year, Pikes Peak was sold and completely dismantled, so we no longer had that as a venue. There was really no way that I could see us going back to a small local track, and I decided we just needed to try for something bigger. Well, it just so happened that Larry Miller over in Utah was building a brand new track. We didn't really know that much about it, but we thought, well, maybe he'll say yes. And so through various connections, and my husband Stan Foxworthy is good friends with Freddie Spencer, we were able to present our request, and again, they said yes. Then it was just a matter of finding a date on the calendar. We get to be the very first event on this track. So we are just absolutely thrilled that we get to basically christen this thing. We're anticipating over 200 riders. We've got people coming all over the nation. I was going through our registration the other night, and we've got probably 17 states represented. We've got someone coming from Florida We've even got someone coming from Canada to ride with us. So anyway, lots of good things, and I just hope that everyone who comes out will just be blown away. I know that we're just bursting with excitement, and the fact that we've got Ben and Eric joining us is also just another bonus, and I know everyone's just going to be absolutely thrilled to meet them as well.
Outstanding. Yeah, that's Ben and Eric Bostrom, which you also have a special auction going on where people can actually get on the track with Ben and Eric. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, indeed. This was another one of those situations that just kind of fell into our lap. My husband Stan was out at the Indy show back in February, got a chance to hook up with Ben and Eric and talked with them more about the event. And between the three of them, they decided that they wanted to create a very unique offering. And so if you go to our website, there is a link that says Bid Now. It says online auctions now open. Win a private track session with Eric or Ben Bostrom. You click on that link and it takes you to another page where you have an opportunity to bid on 5 one-on-one, one-hour-long sessions with Eric or 3 one-on-one sessions with Ben. And those will be held over Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of our event. Now, these kinds of opportunities don't happen every day, and we're just, again, absolutely pleased as can be that Eric and Ben have agreed to do this, and we really hope that people will get excited about this and take full advantage of this great opportunity.
Oh, yeah, I'm kind of excited about it just hearing about it. So now, when you say a one-on-one session with Ben, you're out there on the track by yourself with Ben or Eric Bostrom, right? And
yes.
Now, and Miller Motorsport Part, they sort of changed the configuration to maybe make a 2 separate tracks or something like that, or are you...
Well, the track is a huge track. It's over 4 miles in the complete configuration. We're going to split it into 2 portions, the east side and the west side. We will have... regular track sessions going on one side, and then on the other side, during these one-hour sessions, Ben and Eric will have use of that track. Part of the reason for this is that we want to make sure we protect Ben and Eric. Obviously, they're starting their 2006 race season, and we want them to do extremely well, and the last thing we would ever want to have happen is for them to have an unfortunate moment with another rider and get hurt. So, you know, that was part of the consideration. But the other thing is, the person who wins this bid and gets to have this experience with Eric and Ben, goodness, that's just an incredible focused time that they're going to have, and there will be no one else on the track to distract them.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely an incredible thing. Now, will they also get a chance for, you know, will Ben or Eric be giving them pointers? You know, I mean, you're going to, yeah, so they'll get off the track and Ben will say, you know, you really choked to this corner and that kind of thing, huh?
Yes. Basically, it's one-on-one tutoring from a pro. And, I mean, Eric and Ben are fantastic riders and they're fan favorites. So I should think that anyone who gets a chance to have this kind of one-on-one time can't help but benefit immensely. Part of the inspiration for this actually came out of my personal experience. When I was out at Freddie Spencer's for a class, Jason DeSalvo was out there at that time, and it was amazing that I had a chance to work one-on-one with Jason. And it wasn't nearly to the degree of what we're offering with Ben and Eric. But Jason agreed to go out on the track with me for about 3 or 4 laps. The first couple, I followed him, and then the second couple, he followed me. And just having his input, it boosted my confidence. I was able to go faster. I don't know what it was, but it was just definitely a highlight of my experience. So we think it's really cool.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I mean, you know, these guys are professionals. They really obviously know what they're doing, and the ability to pass that on is, and their chance to do that is going to be a great thing. Now, with that, the auction for these rides with Ben or Eric, these close on April 5th, correct?
That's right.
Okay. Now, and also somebody needs to be already registered for the event as a whole before they can place a bid in the ride with the Bostrom auctions, correct?
That is correct. And we are still having the pre-registration opportunity is available, and it will probably be all the way up to, I want to say, the day or two before we set up the event. So, you know, next week, there's still time to get pre-registered. But yes, everyone who wants to do this one-on-one with Ben and Eric will need to get pre-registered.
Okay. Now that we've kind of covered the one-on-one with the Bostroms, which, like I say, is a fantastic thing and a huge event in itself, but you also have the whole other event going on, which you compared it to a walk-a-thon. Can you tell us a little bit how does it work? How much does it cost to register, and do the people go, you know, and how does it work from there?
Well, let's see. What's the simplest way to explain this? The event will be held over 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Each day will have three-hour sessions, and those sessions will then be broken up into half-hour segments. That will give people an opportunity to try each track. So we're offering a tremendous amount of riding variety, which we haven't ever had before. And like I said, this track is immense. You can't even believe how big it is until you're there looking at it. The information on the registration is on our website. There's a little green picture on the left side that says, "Want to ride?" You click on that, and it gives you the details on the cost. I can just read it here. It says, for your first day, one session is $70, two sessions is $110, three sessions are $140. Then for each subsequent day, I believe there's a $5 discount for each additional session. If you do all 4 days, it's only $500. And I believe your Sunday session, your final Sunday session, is free. So, you know, we're offering just a tremendous value. Obviously, getting an opportunity to ride on this track is pretty amazing. And we're going to have Apex track days out there offering first-time riders instruction. In addition to the main track, there's also a smaller, what they call their go-kart track. And that one is probably the average size of club tracks. So it's no shabby track in and of its own, but that will be probably where we have the first-time riders, and they'll be getting a lot of good coaching and instruction there. And then we'll also have track instructors taking out each group on the main track, showing the lines, you know, demonstrating how to get around the apexes. I mean, we've got one curve out there that's a triple apex, and so a lot of people are going to get confused by that one. So we're really trying to do everything we can to build in a lot of tremendous value and do everything we can to make it a positive experience for everyone.
Oh, yeah. And now you said you're three-hour sessions a day, and the people could sign up. So, I mean, one session, $70, that's 3 hours track time for $70, right?
Exactly.
That alone is a fantastic value. And then if you start adding it all up and you say that you're going to pay $500 to ride at Miller Motorsports Park for the entire event, you're looking at a possibility of a person getting 4 9-hour days on track for $500?
That's right.
Yeah, that's an absolutely stupendous value. What kind of other services will be there? I mean, you're going to have the tire guys there, because if you get people going out there for 4 days, they're probably going to need some tires. Will that be available?
Yes, indeed. Absolutely. We've got tire representatives for all of the brands of tires, and they will have vendor support. If you need to have your the coolant, the antifreeze stuff, you have
water,
to take that out.
And, yeah.
Yes, we have to put water in so we don't get stuff on the track. We'll have people there to help you do that. If you you know, need servicing or a break apart or anything like that, we will have people there who
Great.
Will help you with all that.
And suspension adjustments and all the things that we're accustomed to seeing at a normal track day.
Yes.
Wow, that does sound like just an amazing value. And now that's it. This is what is raising money for the charity, right? It's not like the rider also has to go out and get donations from friends and stuff, like a dollar a lap or something like that, right? They pay this fee and they go and ride and
exactly.
Everybody has a good time, right?
Well, basically, people have the option of getting pledges to cover their track fees if they want to. And I should say that those are donations. I mean, obviously, we're not selling anything here. All of it is to be donations that we're raising for the charity. But the like you say, the fees that we're charging are so nominal, mm-hmm. and we're giving such a spectacular value that we have a lot of riders already collecting more than just $500. We've got Laurel Allen, senior editor of Road Racer X magazine. She's upwards of $1,000 that she's going to give towards her writing fees. And we've got a number of people like that. And that's the kind of spirit and enthusiasm that we absolutely love to see come to our event.
Outstanding. Now, when you said there's 200 riders approximately that are so far signed up, and even with such a large configuration that you've got going on with pretty much three separate tracks, you've got the main track separated into two and then the kart track, that's going to probably be a lot of people out on track at once. Are you going to have some sort of, is there a timetable sort of a thing, or how is that going to work? Or assuming that you get more people involved, what do you have plans for that?
Well, each track is going to have complete corner workers, safety crew, track coordinators, all of that. Safety is a huge concern for us. We will not load the track beyond its safe capacity. And I can tell you that right now we have, let me look here, the Friday midday and Saturday midday sessions are close to capacity, at least in terms of one track. I mean, quite frankly, this track is so enormous that it holds a lot of people, and we're only going to load up each track to about 70 riders. And right now I can tell you that we're upwards of about 60-some people for those midday sessions on Friday and Saturday. So we've got potentially, you know, a whole nother group of people for another track. We've got lots of room left on Thursday and plenty of room left on Sunday.
Oh, wow. So, and now, this is just overwhelming. And I have to admit, I've personally been, you know, a little swamped this past month. And so I haven't been following some of the usual outlets as closely as I want. But this is sort of the first I've heard of the event. And you know, I read a lot of magazines and everything. Are you getting coverage from, you know, from Two Wheel Tuesday? And you mentioned Laurel Allen from Road Racer X. And I think Road Racer X actually might have ran a piece on it, and I remember seeing about it. But are you getting a lot of coverage in the normal media?
Well, this is one of Eric Bostrom's concerns, and he expressed this to me just the other day. We need more media coverage, and it's awesome that you've asked to interview me. I'm not a iPod cast listener per se, but I know that there is quite an audience out there that will be listening to this. Right now we've got commitments from Mitch Beam of Motorcyclist Magazine to be with us. Last I heard, Laurel Allen is definitely planning on being there for the whole event, and she's planning on writing up a huge story in Road Racer X about it. I understand we've got Speed TV coming out and covering it. I think we've got Sportrider, possibly Cycle News. We definitely are planning on having journalists out there. And this week we just got some awesome news. It's still, all the details are being worked out. But we got calls from Red Bull and Yamaha this week asking if they could help us out. And this is just tremendous. I have no idea what's going to come out of this, but believe me, it really got us excited this week.
Oh, yeah, I think it's going to grow and grow and turn into a huge event for you guys. Now, I'm assuming that you and Stan have jobs and everything else, and you're organizing this in your free time, and that alone is something to be admired. Now, one last statement that I had, I wanted to mention that I will put in some posts on like internet forums that I hang out at, and probably a lot of the listeners out there, you guys have already, this is old news to you, you've already heard about this event, but like I said, I hadn't, and when I first heard about it, I thought it was fantastic, and I wanted to give Sharon a call and kind of find out some details about it. And I really hope that, that we do send some interested people your way. We, we have a couple thousand listeners, about 50-50 split of international and U.S., but, that's a lot of people that may hopefully not know or may not know about the event and hopefully will be interested enough to participate. And I think for such a small fee to, and then you just have to get to Utah.
That's right. Well, and I can tell you that this is just happening in April. We've got the rest of the year ahead of us. I don't even know what may still be on our immediate horizon for 2006, but I can tell you that Stan and I are going to be in conversations with people in Mid-Ohio, at VIR, possibly out at Barber. We've got big visions for this organization. We can really see it becoming a national level premier event that everyone will be excited to participate in and be a part of. We are just so pleased and so humbled by the generous outpouring that we've gotten from people. This week alone, getting calls from companies like Red Bull and Yamaha and several others that I've never even heard of calling saying, hey, we've got some stuff. Can we donate it for your silent auction? And we've got some stellar stuff for our silent auction. In fact, I just have to put a plug out there for Jason Watts. He's a fine artist out of Seattle, Washington. He heard about it and offered to do for us an original painting of Eric Bostrom on his Yamaha. And I tell you what, it is absolutely beautiful. I was just awestruck when I saw what it looked like. And he did that for us, just out of the goodness of his heart and wanting to help us out. So check out the website and get involved. We've got so many exciting things planned just for this event alone, but I know we'll have more things coming in the months ahead.
Outstanding. Now, also, real quick, what charities do you, because basically, am I correct that you pass this money along to other children's charities, right?
That is correct. We have chosen to support four charities this year. We've got three out of Colorado, and then Larry Miller himself has his own charity foundation. So we will be, our goal is to raise $60,000. $10,000 of it is going to go to Family Pathways of Colorado. They are a tremendous program for severely neglected and abused children. They work to reintegrate these children back into loving homes. We support Make-A-Wish Foundation of Colorado. Obviously, Make-A-Wish is well known around the nation for the good work that they do for children who have special wishes. And then Here's Life Inner City Denver. These kids are at risk, usually coming out of drug families, high crime areas. So they're doing a tremendous work helping those kids find hope. And then Larry Miller's charity, on average, they give out somewhere around, I don't know, $10,000 to $30,000 every month to various children's charities in the Utah area. And obviously we felt that it was only fitting and right that we would support his effort there in Utah, doing what we're doing. And so we will be giving his charity $30,000 out of our event. And I tell you what, we came out of humble beginnings, but The writing community is incredibly generous, and we could not be more pleased and more proud of what this has become.
Outstanding. All right. And now, what is your website? Where can the listeners go to get more details?
All right. The address for the website is racing2savelives.org, O-R-G.
Okay, and we'll put a link to that on the MotoGPOD.com website. It's racing2savelives.org. Sounds like a fantastic thing, and we wish you the very best of luck, Sharon. And I only wish that I knew about it a little while ago, and I might have been able to organize that for myself to go out there. But I'm afraid that I'm actually going to be at a trade show that week, so I won't be there. But
Well, we'll have to stay in touch, and perhaps we can even do a follow-up email or follow-up interview and let all your listeners know how it went.
That sounds really good. We'd like to do that. We'll keep in touch. So best of luck, and thank you very, very much for your time on the phone today, Sharon.
Thank you so much.
All right, I've got Wayne Wilder from Komodo Gear on the phone right now, and we are going to pick out a winner for the contest to enter to win a set of leathers from Komodo Gear. So are you ready, Wayne?
Yes, I am.
All righty. Okay, what we're going to do here is we're going to pick a random number between 1 and 125, and we're going to basically find that email, and that is our winner. And I came up with number 55. Doesn't sound very random, does it, Wayne? But it is, honest. I used Excel. I'll send you the spreadsheet. Okay, so from that, I will find our 55th winner, and this is going to take half a second.
Oh, very cool. Lucky number 55. Who is it?
Rodney K. Mazian or Mazian. And he did not include his phone number in the email, but we're going to use the power of the internet to find out what his phone number is. Maybe. And we'll give him a call. Otherwise,
do we know where it's from?
Do I know where he's from? Unfortunately, no. And he used looks like from Nevada, though. His email address is, Rodney, I hope your boss isn't listening, but his email address is a .gov address, and it has NV in there. So,
yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, let's see if we can look up his phone number, and we'll call him and congratulate him in person. Let's see, it's 523, so he might be done off work. Unfortunately, I didn't find any listings. But I will send him an email, and you know, we'll inform him by email that he's the winner, and I'll have him contact you by either email or phone, Wayne, and he can, get with you and work out the details and pick out the thing. And I think the contest went really well. We got a lot of entries. All the answers were correct, and I appreciate it a lot. I think, you know, from myself and from the MotoGPOD listeners, we want to say, you know, a big, giant thank you very much, Wayne. We had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad that we had a chance to participate, and it's great to know that we had a great turnout on the emails for the listening audience, so that's fantastic. So thanks again, Bob.
Yeah, no problem. All righty, Wayne. Well, thanks very much. It was good having you on the phone here to pick our winner.
All right. Thank you again.
Okay, that was cool, and I did send an email to Rodney there. I have not yet heard back. I sent that email Wednesday afternoon. I'm recording this late Thursday night, and I haven't heard back from you, Rodney, so I don't know, maybe you didn't check your email on Thursday, or maybe it got filtered or something like that. But if you're hearing this and you haven't got him an email yet, shoot me an email, bob@motogpod.com. We've got to get you hooked up with Wayne Wilder there at Komodo so you can get your free leathers. And again, thank you very much to Komodo Gear for supplying a set of Mizo or Sino leathers for one lucky winner from MotoGPOD, and I hope you all enjoyed the contest. Alrighty, that's going to do it for today. I hope you enjoyed the show. Congratulations to Rodney for winning the Komodo Leathers contest, and thank you very much to everyone else that submitted a contest entry. Hope you all enjoyed it. And check out the racing2savelives.org website if there's any possibility that you can be in Utah on the weekend of April 13th and 14th and all that. It's well worth the price of admission, it sounds like, to that track day. Sounds like a good thing. And even if you can't be in Utah, they have that silent auction going on their website. So maybe go up there, take a look. See if there's anything you want to bid on. They had all kinds of good stuff. Then next weekend we have Qatar, Qatari Grand Prix at Lusail Circuit, and that's a Saturday race. So if you're going to be watching on MotoGP.com, don't forget it will be on Saturday. So there's a little timer on the MotoGPOD.com site, or you can check it out. Steve Jones's Excel spreadsheet, that kind of thing, just so you know the local time, how it converts to Qatari time. And, of course, we will have a race preview show on Friday where I'll probably talk a little bit about qualifying because I think it will have happened by the time I record it. And that's going to be something to look forward to. And also, the Motorcycle Podcast Group, we just put up our show number 3. So motorcyclepodcastgroup.com, that's a group of different podcasters that I get together with, and we just kind of talk about all sorts of stuff motorcycling. It's the John Bunce from the Road Racer Podcast, Ray Duvall from Knee Dragon Podcast, Prubert and Nate from Motocast, and Greg from V-Twin Journal. And not all of us were there, so we couldn't all participate, but there was quite a few of us, and we had a good time talking, and I think you might enjoy that show. And then the last thing, let me know what you think about the sort of total ad-libbing, or should I go back to the scripting? Should I do an in-between? You know, let me know. What do you think? And until then, thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you later. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGP OD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGP OD isn't affiliated with any of them.